Hey, welcome back to Even More News. My name's Katie Stoll.
Hi, my name's Cody Johnston. Welcome back to Even More News.
And we would like to wish you guys a very happy National Lemon Juice Day.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness for that tart. It's that sweet tart juice.
Lemon juice. My favorite thing about lemon juice is that it doesn't get the credit that it deserves and has a day. I mean, now it does because it's got an international day.
I mean, in terms of juice, it's my least favorite juice, but it's good for cooking and drinks.
Take your word for it.
Mixed drinks. You haven't ever had like lemon juice in your cocktails?
Yeah, I squeeze a little lemon and stuff.
Absolutely. But. So today is all about you, lemon heads.
Yeah, lemon heads, get ready for 40 minutes about lemon juice.
Well, this is off to an exciting start. We are back from vacation, guys.
That's true.
This podcast is coming out late because we recorded an episode yesterday, but it was bad because we are so jet lagged. I am still very jet lagged, but we're giving it another shot.
Yeah, this is going to be better.
We're just going to breeze through all the stuff we did yesterday. We talked a lot about our trip and it was boring, so we're going to give you the highlights.
Yeah.
Off to a good start. We're getting back in the swing of things. It is weird. How's the transition back to the real world been for you? Because it's been hard for me.
It's been not great. It's been, I mean, it's fine. I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, it's weird. You're like, well, we've got lots to do, but it's hard to get back into it. I am very tired. I am really feeling the jet lag. By the time the plane landed, I'd been awake for 24 hours and then didn't sleep very much. And then this morning, I woke up at like 3:30 in the morning.
That's fun.
So things are going great.
Do you remember earlier when we were like, let's try to keep the personal stuff to a minimum?
Yeah, but this is just friendly banter. Yeah, okay, we'll just get through. We did agree to that. We're going to get through this real quick, and then we'll talk about some news. But there were some interesting things that we learned on our trips.
Well, yeah, so we started in Berlin, and then we went our separate ways to various countries.
Yeah,
which we'll
because
get into.
Our vacation, we realized we shouldn't vacation with our work buddy.
Yeah, but we started in Berlin. We went to various places that one might think you'd go to. We went to the Berlin Wall, obviously.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Interesting place to walk around and see all the paintings.
And got some, the food and the beer. But one of the first trips to Berlin things we did was go to the Topography of Terror, which is about not spooky mountains, but rather it's about the Nazis.
Yeah, not the topography in terms of geography, but the geography of the rise of Hitler.
Yeah, so it's on the site of the SS headquarters, where they ran all the bad stuff. And it's on that site, sort of in the center headquarters area, and it's just a long museum going through the early 30s onto the rise and the fall. There's some information about what happened afterwards, sort of what happened to certain Nazis post-Nazi stuff.
Spoiler alert, not that much for a lot of them.
Many Nazis sort of got away with it. It's very hard to sort of look at an entire regime and nation and say, well, you all, prison for all of you.
Right, because so many people allowed for this to happen. So like there were different degrees of complicit, but a lot of people that did a lot of war crimes ended up not serving any time at all.
Yeah.
But it was very fascinating. It was a lot of information. It's chilling to see the parallels in our world currently, which is not news to any of us. We've been talking about it a lot.
Yeah.
But what really stuck out to me was this whole idea of the Volk, his playing to the common people during this period after Adolf Hitler,
Adolf Hitler, the Nazi,
the head honcho, played to this feeling of the whole nation being in a rebuilding mode after World War I and needing to regain their dignity and their prosperity. And it just is chilling to think about and to look at it and see how preying upon people's insecurity and vulnerabilities kind of to mask the dark things that were happening.
I think always the stuff that interests me the most in talking about the sort of rise and fall of Nazi Germany. I mean, I I didn't skip over the middle stuff, but I'm very fascinated by the cultural aspects of it. We talked about it on the show before a lot, that sort of how the people and this sort of new party sort of worked in conjunction with each other, yes. Not necessarily on purpose from the people side, but Hitler sort of seeing like, oh, this really plays really well.
Exactly.
So I'm going to change sort of the platform and my rhetoric to fit that,
yeah.
And heighten it to gain more power and more, yeah. Support.
Yeah, that kept popping up saying like, you know, at first this was this message that they put out that, you know, kind of lit up the people and got him on his side, but then seeing the way that starts to morph. So you plant these seeds of the Jews are the others. They've got all the money. You know, they're taking our wealth. They don't need it. They're rich. They can go anywhere. And then people slowly over time, that starts to seep into their consciousness.
Right.
And then so it starts to ratchet up. And now the Nazis are seeing that there's all this sentiment and they're going to play upon that. And it also starts to call into, you know, brings up that question of like, what was the plan all along? Obviously, there was always a hatred.
Right. In their
people.
Original platform, the Jews were mentioned several times, obviously, in like, you know, German citizens and non-German citizens, things like that. But there, I mean, there's a debate currently now still,
yeah.
Among historians of whether or not the final, you know, the Holocaust was,
yeah.
Actually planned, or if they sort of stumbled into it and it became something that they just like, all right, well, this is the easy way to,
yeah.
Take care of the situation.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think that good enough time to talk about the Sachsenhausen. We also went to Sachsenhausen, which is a concentration camp about an hour and a half outside of Berlin. And as you were mentioning, the first time we recorded this podcast, it was one of the first, or it was the first concentration camp built specifically for this.
Yeah.
A lot of other concentration camps kind of evolved, but this one was planned by the Nazis.
Yeah, the SS designed this specifically for their needs. Like,
yeah.
They knew going in, like, all right, well, this is going to be a camp, so we want to have a watchtower at the center, the head of it, and you mount a machine gun on it and sort of have a full view. It was like a semicircle sort of triangle shape, which I know doesn't sound correct because that's not how shapes work, but to be able to see all the prisoners,
yeah.
And then we're going to put the infirmary, which was, you know, mostly for like experiments and things like that over here. And they planned it out to be a concentration camp. And it was the,
yeah.
First one. And then over time they realized they didn't actually plan it out very well because they kept getting more and more prisoners. They didn't plan for as many, they didn't plan to expand.
Exactly.
And so they kept having to build more areas and sort of
places that they could be housed and
yeah.
Whatnot. And
it wasn't designed for expansion, which points
again,
to the idea,
exactly.
That, okay, well, they didn't necessarily plan to do all this, but they kept having more, and it wasn't just Jews, obviously, like it's political,
yeah.
Prisoners and communists and socialists.
Yeah, that was the other thing that really, I think, stood out to both of us.
The topography of terror specifically, there was a section on just like, here are all the political prisoners they had. And obviously, like socialists, communists, social,
yeah.
Democrats, and that's something that, you know, Dinesh D'Souza might not mention when he talks about how the Nazis were actually leftists and socialists. Well, then why did they kill all of them?
Yeah, and those were actually the first people being imprisoned.
Right.
Before all of the tensions were like when they were just starting to ratchet up and before they were bussing off Jewish people. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that doesn't get talked about. Also, all the gypsies and like,
yeah. Aroma.
I guess I'm not Aroma. Yeah, I shouldn't.
The so-called
gypsies. Yeah, and it's just, it was really...
Yeah.
It was a really heavy vacation at the beginning.
And the, like, in terms of, like we were saying, all the cultural aspects and the build-up towards what actually happened and what the,
yeah.
Party was really about. Because obviously they were grifters and they would play to, well, it works for these people, so we're going to say this instead and we're going to go back and forth and figure out what our party is actually about. And one of the other things that really stood out to me was when Hitler would use the phrase useless eaters a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, basically like disabled people, people that can't work,
mm-hmm.
or don't work, and how they're a drain on society. And so it was another way to sort of roll back the welfare state.
Yep.
One might call them these days something else, something maybe not useless eaters, but like a welfare queen.
Sure.
Someone sort of taking advantage of the system.
Yeah. Freeloader.
Freeloader. is another one, mm-hmm. one might say.
Just some rhetoric we might want to keep our eyes open for in yeah, this current day and age.
Another thing I've mentioned on the show before, you know, the Weimar Republic had a welfare state. And when everyone's like, well, the Nazis, you know, they're socialists because they had these programs. Well, no, they rolled them back. Yeah. Over time, like it wasn't, they inherited them. It wasn't like they were like, we got to have healthcare for everybody, like, because everyone deserves the right to go see a doctor.
I think the thing to also latch onto with that is like, yeah, they instituted some social programs to make their people happy. And then they did. They got them on their side. You know what I mean? They got the pride in the country. And then
they excluded certain people.
And they excluded those Jews and the Roma and the communists and anybody that dared. Right. And then there's the press, you know. And so then they roll back the welfare stuff because blah, 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 wartime. Oh, all of this was also was to cloak, to hide the fact that they were building their war machine, that they were preparing for war.
Oh yeah, they were preparing for war, and you need to
much like we might be doing now.
Interesting. yeah, that's always a fascinating thing to me. Not fascinating, just frustrating. Where you're like, oh, you know, the Nazis were socialists. It was the social programs, and like when you think of Nazis, the bad parts, you don't think of like the health care.
The one thing they did right, briefly.
Like, let's just call it what it is and say, when someone's like, well, the, you know, Nazi stands for National Socialist, the socialism wasn't the issue. The nationalism was the problem.
Yeah.
And it's just so obvious and frustrating.
Yeah. And the nationalism still is the problem. See, that's a good transition to the rest of the trip.
Ooh, good.
After being in Berlin a couple of days, Cody went to Croatia and then Venice, and I went to Prague. And then we reconvened in Barcelona for a couple of days in Spain, really getting a tour. And I think for both of us, the nationalism is what stood out. There's a through line of that in everywhere we went. I mean, it's hard to avoid World War II anywhere in Europe. It is everywhere. It's haunting. It's especially hard in Berlin, but it's everywhere.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you go to Germany, you're like, oh, I'm going to go to this. I'm going to go to Sachsenhausen. I'm going to have a really depressing time there.
And it is a part of the culture and grappling with that and recovering from that. But so I went to Prague, and Prague is a magical place. I love it very much. But I knew going into it that they've had a lot of populism. Mm-hmm. And that they've got a president whose name eludes me, even if I knew it. I couldn't pronounce it. Mr. Prague, friend of Putin, you know, corrupt, anti-immigrant, all the things that we're seeing. But as I was taking the bus from Berlin to Prague, I sat next to this girl from Prague who was very nice to me, and which was great because I was feeling like a little overwhelmed and lonely. And as we got closer to Prague, she asked what my bus stop was, and when I told her, she went, ew, that's where all the immigrants live. And
that's cool.
It was such a gut punch. I was like, oh, you aren't nice. So that was interesting.
Right, and the times we live in.
Oh, I get it. And I didn't encounter a lot of that there, but I can, you know, I wasn't interacting with a lot of racists
but
there.
But it's there.
But it's there.
Croatia's dealing with their own nationalism and corruption. Most European countries are.
Like most European countries are.
Yeah.
And so is Barcelona. So that was everywhere. But yeah, it was a really interesting trip. I had the chance to ask people about what, like, their healthcare system there, and like in Prague, it's, you know, well, so they, after World War II, then they became, Russia controlled them for a long time. So they were a communist country. And then in like 89 or 90, I forget the dates because I'm jet lagged, they had their Velvet Revolution. So they gained, which was a totally peaceful revolution, I believe. And so they gained their independence. And then in the early 90s, so at that point, it was Czechoslovakia. They split up into Slovakia and the Czech Republic. So it's no longer communist, but they still have a lot of like socialist.
Sounds like Nazis to me.
Sounds like Nazis. They're doing well, it seems.
The Nazis did well.
So that was all really interesting to dive into while we were there.
Yeah, it's always fun to try to get away from American nationalism and then experience different varieties of it in other countries. I went to Croatia for a couple of days, a place called Pula. It's on the coast. It's got a Colosseum. It's neat. And I walked around a lot. That's just how I like to travel. I like to go a place and then sort of walk around for a day and get a sense of things and then sort of plan from there what I'm going to do. As I was walking around, I stumbled upon this old fort. It's on a very very tall hill. It's the tallest in the city, so you can sort of see everything. Mm-hmm. And it's an old fort. It's been rebuilt several times, and I slowly realized that it was a museum. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to go inside. This is a neat thing to stumble upon. And I go in, and I slowly realize, oh, it's a museum to the anti-fascist movement.
Of course it was. Croatia. You sniffed it out. Yeah. You sniffed out the fascism.
Yeah, I did. I just, my spidey sense was tingling.
You're like a moth to the flame.
So yeah, it was all about, you know, the anti-fascist movement that grew after the fascist Italy invaded and mm-hmm, controlled mm-hmm. them. So that was just very interesting to stumble upon that.
Yeah.
In my quest to get away from it, and obviously, you know, you go through and you see all the different movements and the people persecuted, and then you walk into a room and it's got literally an old Nazi flag next to a bunch of Holocaust survivors talking in Croatian about their experiences. So good vacation by the beach.
Yeah, light and breezy.
Very breezy.
There were good times in there, but we're not in the business of talking about
We're not going to talk about the fun time we had.
And then, like I said, we ended in Spain, which is lovely. And I'd found this Airbnb and the hosts were super cool. They are these alternative journalists and they make, you know, they for Catalonia, because Barcelona is actually in Catalonia, which has been a part of Spain for a long time. But they are currently trying to get their independence, or a group of them are. There's like a big faction of people that have been pushing for it. And if you've paid attention to international news, you might have seen this. But you should pay attention to it, because it's fascinating and it's a big deal that's going on over there. Our friends aren't coming out against it, but they aren't for it. They're saying like it's not, doesn't seem organized. They don't seem to have like another plan in place or anything that's going to improve their situation. And then like randomly ran into a couple of Catalonia separatists at a bar, and they were lovely, happy, really nice. Positive about the movement, saying that it's going to be peaceful, that they want immigrants, that they want to be a progressive country and not be held back by Spain. But at the same time, they were also being very much like Spain is the other. Mm-hmm. It seems it was hard to like catch the full
drift. I don't want to I don't know enough about it to really have an opinion on it.
No.
Things are happening.
It's something that I'm definitely going to be paying attention to, and I think that everybody should. I think that we should try to be better world citizens and see what's happening all around us, because, there's a lot going on here, but it also helps give perspective. Mm-hmm. It was very hard for me to pay attention to the news. Yeah. At all. It made me nauseous to even to look at Twitter. So I didn't.
That's good for you. It was easier for me too. A lot of sitting on trains and waiting in line for stuff. I'd check out what's going on and fire off a tweet or two. I was definitely less engaged than normal.
Yeah, that was a step in the right direction.
As I've seen in returning for a day.
You're back at it.
It's awful. I need to like delete the app or just
do it.
I need to schedule it in a way. I checked in on a few things, which we'll get into.
Yeah. So this is going to be even more fast and loose than it normally is.
Yeah.
Jet lagged and catching up on the news. But
real quick, why don't we do a quick break post Europe talk?
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And then get back into the freaking good news.
Let's get into the freaking good news.
Today's episode of Even More News is brought to you not only by the patrons from patreon.com/somemorenews, who are just the cutest and the sweetest, who support this show.
The best, most valuable, beloved supporters that ever there were.
We can't thank you enough, and we hope this content and commercial is enough for you.
But it's also brought to you by stamps in your passport.
Ooh.
Do you have stamps in your passport?
I do.
You do?
For every place I went. Do you not?
Because I don't have stamps in my passport.
You didn't get stamps wherever you went?
I didn't get stamps in all of my for everywhere I went, which is a good thing because I did so many crimes in Prague.
Wait, so you went to Prague and you did some crimes?
I did so
and
someone many crimes.
So like if someone accused you of going to Prague in like a for lack of a better word, a dossier.
Sure,
And someone accused you of being in Prague.
Right.
And you would then be able to show your passport and go, well, I've never been to Prague.
Never been to Prague.
I didn't get my passport stamped.
Yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
It wouldn't even have to be the front of my passport.
Oh, so you wouldn't tweet the front of your passport to prove you never been to Prague? You'd tweet the inside?
I would flip through it and I would show them unfathomably all my stamps at Arlanda Airport, where I didn't even get out of the airport, but no stamps from Prague.
Which you have been to.
Which I have been to. I also didn't get stamps in Germany, and it's disappointing.
I got stamps everywhere I went.
Okay.
Got a Venice stamp.
And we're back!
Oh, good.
We're back for more news!
Whoa, the good kind?
No, the frustrating kind.
Oh, good.
It's going to be great. Like I said, I was a little checked out the last 2 weeks. So let's just fire off a couple of the things that I missed.
Oh, fun.
We'll touch on that before talking about what's going down.
What's going down now?
What's going downtown right now.
Yeah. A few things. I just sort of popped in every once in a while to see what was going on. And, I mean, only a couple things really stood out because I didn't spend...
A series of people cooperating, getting immunity with prosecutors.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to note that the president's very good lawyer has flipped on him on the same day that his campaign manager...
You need to go on Fox and Friends and say, like... He's not a very good lawyer.
Oh, God.
Though he tweeted it, too.
I do want to give the president credit where credit is due, because he went online. He logged into Twitter.com.
Sure.
Or maybe he opened up his Twitter app on his Galaxy S3, his very secure Galaxy S3 that he still uses. And he tweeted, if anyone needs a good lawyer, I wouldn't recommend Michael Cohen. And
it's
just want to say, that's funny, man. Yeah.
It is funny and true. One of the truest, it's also true. Things you ever said.
It's interesting that you had that lawyer for so many years and stood by him and thought he was a good lawyer until he flipped on you for all those crimes that you're implicated in.
It is funny, isn't it?
It is funny. One thing actually I did want to mention about this that I think is slightly related. So Michael Cohen's a bad lawyer, as the president's very funny joke illustrated. And he's only got two other clients, and one of them is Sean Hannity. Recently, one of the things that was reported while we were gone is that the president is very seriously considering basically privatizing the war effort in various countries and putting Blackwater in charge. They're basically like hired mercenaries in this private sort of military group. That is founded by Eric Prince, who not only tried to form the back channel in the Seychelles, but also is the brother of the current Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, billionaires. And so his plan supposedly is to privatize this and outsource the military operations to Blackwater. And I think that's interesting for many reasons. A, it's a bad idea.
But they already have military operations. But so you're saying there'd be more?
Yeah, there'd be more, and we would pay.
Yeah,
we would pay this company that was founded.
I mean,
by
we already
the Secretary of Education. Oh, he's got like contracts and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes,
but you mean like amping them up?
Yeah. And so like you know the two sweetest words in the English language: privatize and war. So we're going to put those together for Blackwater. But also, so this idea was actually originally pitched to Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago by a person, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, and I apologize for that. He is the third client of Michael Cohen.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Fun little full circle.
Fun little full circle. And also, that person's one of his business partners who's been working with Blackwater for a while and has Blackwater connections is also a convicted pedophile.
Cool.
So, hey, QAnon folks, maybe focus on the president's relationships.
We're all about that corruption.
We're all about it.
All about it. Any other biggies while we were gone?
John McCain died.
John McCain died. That was something. I like the Pod Save America conversation that they have about him. I don't think you've listened
to
it.
I did not listen to it.
It's a complicated issue how we react to this. Mm-hmm. And I avoided it. I continued to not go on Twitter. I especially didn't that day.
That's wise. You would have been upset probably.
Yeah, it makes me sad. Mm-hmm. It's complicated because obviously I don't agree with his politics. I think he's done terrible things. I also am grateful for the times that he has had integrity and stood up. And I know that you have a different opinion about that.
I do.
Or there were times like with the – you know, during the campaigning against Obama, when people would say awful things about Obama and he would say, no, he's a decent man. And I don't agree with his politics, but he's a good person. And, you know, there is a element, he is a one of the better Republican politicians.
Yeah. And I would just real quick, I think it's a more nuanced conversation to have that we don't have time for, and there's different ways to sort of parse what he said. But when he said, no, he's a good man, it was in response to someone saying he's an Arab.
Yes.
And saying that, no, he's not an Arab. He's a good, decent family man.
I know. And that's specifically, I don't want to keep talking about our competitors, Pause Save America.
Oh.
But that's specifically, they had this conversation, and I've gone back and forth and heard both of those arguments. And for them, like, Tommy Vietor was like, you know what? Honestly, that's on all of us, because I worked in the White House at that time, and people would call me about it and say, like, Obama's an Arab or a terrorist, and I wouldn't respond to that. I would say, no, he isn't. He's a good, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And that was how we talked about it. And he said, like, and honestly, at no point during that time and during that period did I have anything but gratitude, or that's not exactly what he said. We felt that it was a kind, good thing. And I think that the way we would handle a question like that now, just however many years
later, for sure.
Is,
I mean,
different.
It's, yeah.
I just think it's maybe a little bit unfair sometimes to put the lens that we view things in right now on something,
sure,
12 years ago, however many years ago it was.
Yeah, I will say that, yeah. I mean,
and a lot
of racial slurs during that time from McCain, too.
Yeah, and like, again, I'm not defending any of that. I think it is a complicated issue. And we've talked about this in the past, and like when Antonin Scalia died, we had those conversations at Cracked about how you handle talking about someone who was awful in the public sphere. That's the truth of it. Not that I agree with him or liked the man.
Yeah, sure. I hear that. I think a lot of the harsher reaction to it, and a lot of the people, you know, on that day and since then, a lot of tweets of like, fuck John McCain, and he did this. I think a lot of that sort of stems from a reaction to the mainstream media and sort of punditry in general, revering him as with an uncritical eye as a hero.
Sure.
And I think when you have people being like, oh, he's a human rights advocate, he did this, he's like, this overwhelming amount of respect without sort of viewing him also as a public figure who had a real material,
sure,
effect on people. And in some cases was instrumental in, you know, wars and starting wars.
Absolutely.
And supporting wars that killed millions
of
people.
He did apologize for his support for the Iraq war.
Well, that's something.
And that was another thing that they brought up. He's like one of the few Republican politicians that do occasionally acknowledge mistakes. And,
sure.
So that's why it makes it a complicated mixed bag.
Yeah. And I think, I just think a lot of the negativity comes from feeling this overwhelming positivity. Without, mm-hmm, like, you know, there's a New York Times article by, I think, Jennifer Rubin, where the headline was, you know, we just lost like a staunch like human rights advocate. And the photo being used for the article was him, John McCain, standing next to literally a Ukrainian neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, where it's like, well, you can't make these claims just because you want to show respect. You need to really contextualize that,
yeah,
and really show the effect that he had and a lot of the relationships that were unsavory, but also, you know, say the positive things.
I think that all of it's
supportive,
important.
Like the Syrian people and things like,
yeah,
that.
As a final thing, Trump is not invited to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's funny.
His service. I think that's very cool.
It would have been cooler if he voted against him more.
Yeah,
but
sure. But I think
there's a lot of performative stuff.
No, but I think it's undeniable that over the past year especially, he's stepped up. I mean, sure, there's a death thing. Like, he was dying and whatever,
right,
but he made the most of his last year, and most Republicans haven't. And I do think it's important to give that credit.
Yeah, credit where it's due. I just expect more from people in power.
Yes,
and,
sure, and that's universally disappointing. But I think it's pretty cool, at least on the surface, that he's invited Obama and George Bush, mm-hmm, to speak to people that he lost to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting and cool symbolic gesture that says a lot about what his hope for the future and for this country and what politics can hopefully be again. And one last point about all of that, like, who's to know what John McCain would be like if he didn't have brain cancer, if he was still in office. I like to think that our lives, we continue to change and learn and grow, and all the actions at the end of his life, you know, or at least, mm-hmm, that those are things that I think are cool, and I'm grateful that that's the way that he is going. So
I will not respond and keep the end of this positive.
Okay. And sure, if you got me in a different mood, maybe I'd have a different answer. But right now,
yeah,
you know.
No, we need the positivity, and we need to take what we can get.
Speaking of taking what we can get, Louis C.K.
Ugh.
Yuck.
Oh,
I know.
God. Why do you phrase it like that?
Because I was just, you know, being seamless with my transitions.
Oh, take what we can get.
As we all know, I am seamless mm-hmm. with my transitions.
Mm-hmm. Seamless.com, proud sponsor of some other podcast.
Yeah, check them out. Yeah, so I'm sure you guys have seen this. Louis C.K. has resurfaced this week. He did a set. He did a surprise
Emerged, surprisingly.
Like a phoenix.
Perhaps forcing people to experience him in an uncomfortable atmosphere
so
that they
upsetting.
Did not ask for.
I read this Vox article. I think it was Vox today. Maybe some other news place. Mm. About some people, about the experience of being there, and that it was a really supportive crowd. A lot of the men, at least at the beginning, like he had like a standing ovation, but it was kind of lukewarm by the end. Mm-hmm. And that the women, like there were several women that were like shocked and like really upset, which I get.
What?
Yeah. He made some rape whistle joke.
That's cool, man.
And didn't address anything. And also,
well, he's not known
the point,
for being able to read the room.
I mean, come on. This is the people talking about this now and like in defense of him. And some of you guys listening are them.
Sure.
And like, I don't want to completely shit on your perspective. But like, this is crazy. Yes, men need to have a way back to life. Yes, I hope that Louis C.K. can find some peace in his life and he can grow. But I'm sorry, 9 months and no actual acknowledgement or growth is not cutting it. Years of truly horrific behavior. I mean, you can't say that locking women in a room and forcing them to watch you masturbate isn't a big deal. Yeah, it's not a Weinstein-level rape, but it's deeply disturbing, and it's manipulation of power, and then like threatening people that want to speak out and going through for years covering it up, and then making I Love You Daddy, which is just a big fuck you to everybody because he knew that the story was about to come out. And that just speaks to like a real deeply rooted, what's the word I'm looking for?
Fucked up-ness.
Some real deep-rooted fucked up-ness. And that takes years and years of therapy. And there is absolutely nothing that Louis C.K. has to say right now that anybody needs to hear. What about his comedy? He killed that. And if he wants to process what he's learned in some other kind of art eventually, maybe there will be a place for that. Maybe, but maybe not. And honestly, he doesn't need the money. He's a millionaire. He's fine. Let him go heal. You're not healing here.
It's not anything. And he's definitely disturbed because he knew what he was doing was really, really, really wrong. And he knew his denying those women the ability to speak out about it at you know, the detriment of their careers, that he knew that was bad, and then making that movie was super fucked up to flaunt. He was bragging about it. He did this disturbing behavior and then bragged about it in an entire film.
Someone was like, how is this about power? How is this not about power? That's the root of...
Yeah, there's so many people, these weird apologists for his behavior, like, why didn't they leave? It's just a complete lack of understanding or empathy of what... how women... and got away with it and then admitted to it, then you go away for 9 months. That's not doing the time. That's taking a vacation.
Yep.
That's a millionaire going on vacation and then showing up one day to tell a bunch of like zingers about parenthood and apparently a rape whistle joke.
Yep.
And not acknowledging it and thinking that you can just sort of do that is weird, and not doing the work. Donating to like a sexual assault shelter, like doing any sort of thing when you're a millionaire.
There's a million
things
you can do.
To show that you understand truly what you did, especially for someone who constantly puts himself in his material and like really examines himself, or like, you know,
or he would pretend it to.
Right. To a point, examining himself and putting on this air of being like, I'm like raw. I like really like expose myself. But like, you know, like he's like, yeah, men are disgusting, this and this and this, but like not really being able to examine that. And I even I saw there are so many headlines about this were like, Louis C.K. Emerges after sexual assault allegations. They weren't allegations because he literally admitted to doing it. He said all of these stories were true and then he disappeared. Some publications changed their headline.
Good.
But
because you brought it up?
No, but because everybody brought it up.
Yes.
And I think that's good. But like when the impulse is to phrase it like that, yeah, that should tell us something about how seriously people take this.
Yeah.
They weren't allegations. They were allegations for years until he literally admitted to it. I also saw one, a few people, some prominent figures or whatever, tweeting about this, and one of the they talked about this in saying like, oh, Louis C.K. shows up and I just heard that Aziz Ansari also tried to do something. And I just want to say that what Louis C.K. did is not the same as what Harvey Weinstein did, and what Aziz Ansari did is not the same as what Louis C.K. did.
Mm-hmm.
Aziz Ansari is a bad date. He went on some bad dates and made women feel bad, which is not good. I'm not apologizing for that. Mm-hmm. But like, he didn't lock women in a room and force them to jerk off, yeah, like watch them jerk off. Like that is, it is, there are degrees to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to equate Aziz Ansari being a shitty date and like not a great guy is not the same as a powerful man doing that.
There are other stories about Aziz Ansari that aren't in the thing.
That's
and
a bummer.
I mean, you know, we know lots of people in our lives. It's not our place to talk about, but still not the same as it is. He's a little shitty.
Yeah,
I'll say, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe he's better.
I mean,
than
I
that.
Take your word for it.
But like, I think, but there has been a track record, a serial track record of being a certain way with women.
Yeah.
But again, not the same level. But Aziz Ansari does have some stuff to learn.
Sure.
But I'm not saying that his career needs to be over. And like what he needs to do is different than what Louis C.K. needs to do. Like that's more on a personal
right.
level for him.
But they also need to do something, and that's the
they
thing.
They need to do something.
Like, the idea that like it's just a matter of time. Just like wait it out, and then you'll show up.
Nope.
And like Matt Lauer is going to return. Apparently, he announced,
give me
and it's like
break.
What? Like first of all, Matt Lauer, you have
there's no
you have
redemption.
A robot's job.
Yeah,
we do not need specifically Matt Lauer to do anything that Matt Lauer does.
You're not a valuable
player
here.
Right. There's nothing like unique about Matt Lauer that we require him to
but
do
even
Matt
if there
Lauer's
were,
job.
Yeah.
Even if there were. But like, again, it's not a matter of time.
Yeah.
It's a matter of action.
Okay.
And, okay.
Well, we'll talk about one more news story real quick. Just something you guys should be paying attention to, not getting enough coverage. People are talking about this prison strike. I'm not well enough informed to talk too much about it. That's also because mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a dearth of information about what's actually happening. But it began on August 21st, and it's supposed to be one of the largest prison protests this country's ever seen. It's going to last till September 9th. You know, they're going to be hunger striking. There's a spending strike, labor strike. And this is all against the loophole in the 13th Amendment that basically treats prison
–
yeah, prisoners as slave labor, low paid. It's also against discrimination and what goes into sentencing and parole decisions, visitation rights, and getting access to rehabilitation, which, in my opinion, needs to be a huge part of our prison. Like,
you think that's what the focus would be on?
You'd think that's what the prison would – yes, about punishment, but also about rehabilitating like they do in other countries.
Mm.
But what's interesting is – it's hard to get information about how it's actually going because prisons are being really tight-lipped.
Well, prisons are prisons.
The prisons are prisons. Well, they're not getting any letting in information out, but there are reporters that have gotten phone calls from inmates, and we know what's happening. You know what's happening all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to gauge what the actual numbers are, but it's probably more than what they even know. But of course, the prisons aren't letting information out because they don't want it to spread.
Sure. Why would you want that?
But we should be paying attention to it.
Yeah. And yeah, expect, you know, obviously, like, don't, like, just, like, tweet at all the freaking reporters. But, like, I don't know. I think we should expect we should expect more from our media and our journalists
mm-hmm.
who are doing this kind of work and who should be reporting on this. Like, there's a reason we don't really know about it, and it's because, like you said, like, they're being very tight-lipped about it, and they're trying to make sure it's not getting out. But we do know that it's happening.
Yeah.
And we should expect, you know, even, like, organizations like CNN, they should be reporting on this.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be spending literally all day talking about Trump's latest tweet. They should be talking about real news. And that's how I know, like, ratings are important, but if they have the ratings, if you talk about important things like this, then you're using your platform for good.
Yeah, you're doing your job.
You're doing your job.
yeah, I mean, there are some articles. I mean,
it's percolating. I mean, the same thing with, I think, the teacher strike. Like, not many people talked about a lot of the teacher strikes when they first starting out.
Yeah.
It was more like independent journalists. So obviously make sure you continue to follow independent journalists who are actually doing this work. And then it slowly got reported by a lot of the larger organizations.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to keep seeing that with this and obviously most stories that come out.
Yeah.
But we'll know more about this in the future. We sort of, again, popped in after our trip. And
I'm
like,
very jet lagged.
Oh, this. Okay. I got to read about this. Got to read about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So next week we'll be back to our normal, full-functioning, non-sleepy, well-informed selves.
Something about, I know yesterday Mitch McConnell forced through a bunch of judge votes for Trump's justices, and it was all a deal made with, I believe, Chuck Schumer to ensure that they could name a building after John McCain.
Which they were going to do anyway.
Which they're going to do anyway. And it's just like, like, I've seen joke tweets about that from like a year ago about how weak and useless the Democratic leadership is. It's like, oh, we want to do this, but okay, we will. But we got to focus on this statue of McCain first. Like, that's literally a tweet I've seen. And a year later, like, we're going to put in all these lifetime judges. We're going to do it really quick in a quick emergency vote so that you can name this building after him. And that's just embarrassing.
I need to read more about that story. Yeah. I don't understand.
And I know McConnell went around to some of his fellow senators and said, like, we can't let this happen, actually, because it'll piss off the president.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, everyone is useless.
Everyone is useless, but we love you very much.
We do love you very much.
I don't have recommendations this week because I've been traveling and I don't want to just keep gloating about it.
Recommendations?
But, you know, I've been ending the podcast with happy things, but next week.
I would recommend Disenchantment.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Netflix show from Matt Groening.
Oh, cool.
He did The Simpsons, obviously, and then he moved on to Futurama, and now he's got this fantasy show called Disenchantment. The cast is great. The theme song is just amazing.
Okay.
And it's 10 episodes, and it's very good. I look forward to more. I hope that they continue to make it, because it's just, it's everything you loved about all those other shows, but it's new.
Well, I'll definitely check it out. I've been finally watching Homeland, and it's very good. But you guys already know that, so I'm not giving that a hot rec. Although, at a certain point on this goddamn show, for those of you who've seen it, how many times does Carrie Matheson have to be right and then all the men around her tell her to go home and rest or take her pills? Because she is, yes, kind of crazy. But, like, never, ever do they just believe her. So that's frustrating, and it's not going to be my recommendation.
I got so bored when he started talking about Homeland. I don't know why.
He checked out.
Like a reaction I have whenever anyone brings up Homeland. I was like,
it's a really good show. You would like it.
I believe you, but I just.
All right. Well, we love you guys very much.
That's still true.
You're the best part about being back.
Oh.
Not you, Cody. Them.
Oh.
Bye.